Time to get started.
I'm going to
see you. Hey Louise, good to see you. See you guys. Whew. I get so wrapped up in my drawings, I wasn't even looking at the time.
Here's
okay,
an angel.
1, 2, 3.
Look like a baby in a basket.
It's not a baby. Okay, we are continuing our study in the visions of God. We are in Zechariah chapter 5. And we are in the middle of Zechariah's night of many visions. He had lots of visions. And last time we talked about the vision of the lampstand and the olive trees. We talked about all of that. And, you know, when you see chapter 5, verse 1, it just says, "Then I turned and raised my eyes and saw." Right? So this is a continuous series of visions he's having in one night, as far as we can tell from the writing. And, you know, when you see this, you see just this, I mean, so many different things he's being shown. But we always have to keep it in the context. First of all, why is God showing it to Zechariah? That's who's seeing it. I mean, he's recording it for us. But God was showing it to Zechariah for a reason. He had a message he wanted to get through to Zechariah and to get through to the people of Zechariah's day. Now, that doesn't mean that everything that God showed Zechariah was only intended for the people of that day, right? Or we'd say, why don't we even look at the Bible? The Bible was finished being written 2,000 years ago. Why don't we even look at it? Well, one reason is, as Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. Men are still men. They still sin and they still need God. But the other thing is there is a lot, as we've seen, a lot of prophecy in the book of Zechariah. A lot of messianic prophecy, prophesying the coming of the Messiah, of Christ. And you also have a lot of very specific prophecies that are about where they're at in time. Remember, Zechariah and Haggai were two prophets who prophesied after the Babylonian exile, after they'd come back to Jerusalem. They'd been there for about 20 years. They built the wall first. You read Ezra and Nehemiah, you read all this. They built the wall first, then they kind of piddled around and built their own houses and didn't build the temple. And then, you know, Haggai says, "Y'all ever wonder why you're not doing too good? Your crops aren't barren, you're scared all the time, you're oppressed and everything else. You think maybe you ought to pay a little more attention to me? And maybe you ought to build my house? You've been living in your fancy houses and my house lies in ruins." So they got after it, but they didn't get after it with their whole heart. And then Zechariah, in the same year, remember the context of the book, in the same year, Zechariah shows up and he says, "You guys need to get after this temple with your whole heart and get it built." And the visions that he's having, a lot of it has to do with encouraging the leaders, who at this time were Zerubbabel, who was the governor of the area, and Joshua the son of Jehozadak, who was the high priest. So you've got, you know, these visions are to encourage the leaders to get the job done, get the temple built, and a lot of this is what's going on in here. That it's time for God to bless the people with the temple again. Remember, there were 70 years from the first captivity when Daniel and his fellows were taken until they were released. And there was 70 years from the destruction of the temple in 586 to the dedication of the temple in 516, which is just a year or so away from where we are now in the book. Right? So God said, It's time for me to bless my people. It's time for my presence to come back and be among the people in the temple. But you got to get it built, and you got to do it with your whole heart. So here we are. He's in the middle of this dream. We're going to start chapter 5. "Then I turned and raised my eyes, and I saw there a flying scroll. And he said to me, 'What do you see?' So I answered, 'I see a flying scroll, and its length is 20 cubits and its width 10 cubits. And he said to me, 'This is the curse that goes out over the face of the whole earth. Every thief shall be expelled according to this side of the scroll, and every perjurer shall be expelled according to that side of it. So I will send out the curse, says the Lord of hosts. It will enter into the house of the thief and the house of one who swears falsely by my name, and it shall remain in the midst of his house and consume it with its timber and stones.'" Now, verse 5 starts another vision, so we're going to just take this piece right here. So first of all, he says there's a flying scroll, or if you were in the King James, a flying roll. They had, when they made books back then, before they started, remember when we studied how we got our Bible, we talked about the evolution of writing material and printed matter, that they used to start with skins, just single pieces. Then they started stitching them together and rolling them up for longer pieces, and then eventually they started folding the pieces and binding them together. They just had them kind of fan folded, and then eventually they bound the edges together, and that's how we got modern books, right? So this is the whole stretch. But this is before they had folded books, okay? So this is how they kept large bodies of writing. So it was a roll, and it was, you know, or we would say a scroll. It very, very likely would have been on a rod of some kind, some sort of a stick, so it could be held and managed. But this isn't just any ordinary scroll. This is a big scroll. 20 cubits by 18 cubits. How long is a cubit? Huh? Roughly a foot and a half. What was the measure of a cubit? If I was out in the woods and I needed to measure something, I wanted to measure by cubits, what would I do?
Elbow to fingertip.
Yeah, right here. Now granted, my cubit's longer than your cubit. And my cubit's about 24 inches and yours is about 18. But roughly speaking, a cubit is 18 inches. It's foot and a half. So if that's a foot and a half, then this is 15 feet and that's 30 feet. That's big. So 15 feet is to the top of, this is 16 foot high right here. So this is, it's the top of the ceiling. That's the width of the round. And then twice that, which is almost to the back of this room. So if you had a scroll that big, it would fill half of this auditorium. That's how big he's seeing. What's the other strange thing about this scroll? It's flying. So not only is it big, it's flying. Now, scrolls don't fly, right? So this is obviously a vision. He's having this figurative vision. Now, I tell you what, back in the 60s and the 70s, you remember when there was a guy by the name of Eric von Däniken, and he wrote a book called Chariots of the Gods, and it was a very popular book. And the book was about, in fact, during the UFO craze, and he was saying, oh, you know, we've been visited by ancient astronauts, and, you know, all this stuff about gods and visions and things, those are all UFOs, those are all aliens. This was his book. And one of the things that he referenced in there was this flying scroll. And he said, you see, there it is. There's an alien spaceship right there. It's about this big, and it's flying through the air. There's an alien spaceship right there in the book of Zechariah. Okay, first of all, this ain't no alien spaceship. Because what does he say it is? It's a scroll. Not only does he say it's a scroll, what does he say about the scroll? It's got writing on it, which of course you would expect a scroll to have. Now, it's not just any writing. What does he refer to? He says it's written on one side and it's written on the other side. So both sides of the paper have writing on it, which means it's full. What are the two things that are written on the scroll that he references?
Into the house of the thief and those that swear by God false.
Right. So basically it says the things that are on the scroll is the condemnation of lying and stealing. Okay? That's why I had thou shalt not steal on this one. And he says, so first of all, where have we heard that before? Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not lie. Yeah, the Ten Commandments. Exactly. Right next to this. Exactly. And here is a really large scroll. And so what you're getting here, now you could sit here and say, well, it just says lying and stealing, so that's all he's talking about. But more than likely what he's talking about here, these are the commandments of God. Right? Here's my commandments. Now, what does he say is going to happen to the thief or the liar? There's two things he says are going to happen. We just read it. He said they're going to be expelled from the land. Now this is important to keep in context, especially with the next vision that's coming up. They're going to be expelled. I'm getting rid of them. And then what does it say? What's going to happen to their house? The scroll is going to enter their house and remain there and consume it. Even its stones and its timbers are going to be consumed. Now, First of all, this is a big scroll. They didn't live in that big a house. You know, most of us live in fairly good-sized houses. This is pretty good. This would be a pretty good-sized house. Half of this auditorium, right? It'd be a pretty good-sized house. So that scroll did not come through the front door. That's one thing I realized when I was reading about this. That scroll's not coming through the front door.
He probably ate his way in.
It's coming through the door, through the wall, through the ceiling. It's crushing the house, right? And not only that, what it says, it stays there. So this curse, and God says, this is the curse that goes throughout the earth. Now, it goes there and it stays there. There's no getting away from it. It consumes even the stones and the timbers. Now, in context, for one, what are you seeing? Dominantly powerful judgment on the thief and the like, right? You're seeing that. But remember, these people are every day when they get out of their houses and they walk down to the market or they walk down to where they've got their sheep or whatever it happens to be, they're walking through a rebuilding but ruined city. The temple is still in ruins. Jerusalem was a pretty good sized town. When the Babylonians got through there, there wasn't one stone left on another. It was a pile of rock. They burned everything and destroyed everything. When the Romans came through Jerusalem in 70 AD, they did the same thing. Okay? So, when they understand what it means for the rocks and the timbers to be consumed. This is a reference to God's judgment. And he says, this is how I judge you, and you know it. You can look around you and see the last time that I judged you as a nation, you know what happened? The whole place was destroyed. And I'm telling the thief, and I'm telling the liar, and by implication, anyone else who disobeys my commandments, this is what's going to happen to you. This is a very strong warning. Okay? But the other interesting thing, he says, I'm going to expel them. I'm getting rid of them. I'm not just punishing them, I'm getting rid of them. Then this whole business about this is the curse that goes throughout the whole earth. We know that God is a God of great blessing. He's also a God of curses. If he curses something, it's cursed. And if he blesses something, it's blessed. What's the first curse that occurs in the Bible? I'll give you a hint. It's in the book of Genesis. Huh? It was in the time of Adam and Eve. After the sin of Adam and Eve, God said to Adam, the land is cursed because of you. And instead of this wonderful garden, it's going to raise up thorns for you. And instead of the food dropping off of the tree into your mouth, you're going to have to work and sweat and toil all the days of your life to feed yourself. And he said, that's a curse. There's another place that says, no more will I curse the land, right? But there's another set of curses that are very relevant, especially when you think of this as being the commandments of God. Where would that be? You remember what happened when Moses got the Ten Commandments and got them all together?
He gave a list of blessings, and then he gave a list of curses.
Yep.
The curses far outweigh the blessings as far as number are concerned. But almost you see them fulfilled in detail as you study the Old Testament.
Yes.
Even the name Jew is one of those curses.
And when the people were getting ready, he put one group of them on one side of the valley and another on the other side of the valley. And one of them, as all the people walked through, they pronounced the blessings and the curses. And they said, we will obey God. We will follow your commandments. They committed themselves to the covenant. A covenant is a promise, right? It's a contract. It's an arrangement. They committed themselves to the covenant and said, we will follow you and we accept both your promise of blessings and your threat of curses if we do not. That's what he's doing. So here he's reminding them. He's saying, this is still out here, folks. This is like one of those things. It's like, we have this saying that, sometimes you're in a situation with people and there's this undercurrent of stress, and like no one wants to talk about it, but says there's an 800-pound gorilla in the room, or there's an elephant on the table. You ever heard that? This is an elephant on the table. And he's saying, this elephant's still here, folks. You've got to obey my word. Now, we know a little of this. Remember when he talked about Zerubbabel in the previous chapter, he said, Not by my, but by my spirit, says the Lord, you will build this temple. And he's telling them, this is how you're going to do it. You're going to do it in righteousness. You're not going to do it by man's strength. In a minute, we're going to hear a similar thing in another chapter where he's saying, you will accomplish this if you keep my commandments. So this is all in the context of the law of Moses and the commandments, which they had pretty much ignored. That's how they got in trouble and got sent off to Babylon.
You hear the same thing today. Someone said, well, what that was 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And those people here said, well, this is 500 B.C. That was written back 1450 B.C.
Yeah.
So, and I say, well, things change, but God's word never changes.
Yeah. Now, what did Jesus say we're going to be judged by? He said, my word will judge you in the last day. Same concept here. The word of God is judging the people. Now, Zechariah is in Jerusalem. He's in Jerusalem, which is now a province of the land of the empire of the Medes and Persians. It's not an independent country. They're kind of under control there. But all the people have come back. Now, all these people that came back, are they all really righteous, holy people? No, we know that. We know that because I mean, when they came back, a bunch of them had foreign wives. Even the priests did, and they had to come and take care of that problem. And here they've been ignoring God's temple and been building their own houses. These people are not all real spiritual people. So he says, I'm gonna remove these. Now let's move on a little bit. This one's really interesting on a lot of fronts. Verse 5. Then the angel who talked with me came out and said to me, lift your eyes now and see what this is this that goes forth. So I asked, what is it? And he said, it is a basket that goes forth. And also he also said, this is their resemblance throughout the earth. Here is a lead disc lifted up, and there is a woman. This is a woman sitting inside the basket. And then he said, this is wickedness. And he thrust her down into the basket and threw the lid over its mouth. And then I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming with the wind in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork. And they lifted up the basket between heaven and earth. So I said to the angel who talked with me, where are they carrying the basket? And he said to me, to build a house for it in the land of Shinar. When it is ready, the basket will be set there on its base. Boy, talk about a vision. So the first thing he says is there's an angel talking to him. This is the same angel that's been talking to him the whole time. And he says, the angel says, now look over here. And what he sees is a basket. Now in Hebrew this is ephah. Okay? An ephah is a bushel basket, roughly. Or big basket, you know, it's a big basket, large basket. So here comes this basket. And there is, he says, there is a lead disc. Well, first of all, he says, what do you see? And he says, and I asked, what is it? I don't know what it is. And he says, it's a basket, and it's going forth. And he also said, this is their resemblance throughout the earth. Here is a lead disc, lift it up, so there's a lid on it. And there's a woman sitting inside the basket, and then the angel says, this is wickedness, and thrusts her back down the basket, and slams the lid back on it. And the words there really is that kind of violent thing. It's not, you know, delicately, oh, look inside the basket. Oh, looky there, there's a woman. Huh, I think I'll just put the lid back down. It's nothing like that at all. He opens up the basket. There is a woman who's figuratively wickedness. And then it says he thrusts her down to hold it. She was in the basket. The lid was on her. He lifts up the lid. If he hadn't thrust her down, what's she doing? She's trying to get out. Right? I didn't have time to draw a harpy or something, but that you get the feeling that this is not a nice person. And he slams her, pushes her back down the basket and slams the lid on it. Now in the King James, this says a talent of lead. A talent of lead. Now we've heard talent all through the Bible, right? Talents of gold and silver, you know, the parable of the talents. So what's a talent? Because it helps to understand the seriousness of this picture. So a talent was a measurement of something solid and heavy, but often a measurement of gold, silver. And it had various measures, you know, by our standards, you know, how do we know that something weighs something? Like if I said I want something weighs exactly a pound, how would we know it was exactly a pound?
Well, you know, some scales.
But how would we know the scales are right? You have to compare with another pound. Where is the perfect pound? The one standard in all the earth that is the perfect pound.
16 ounces.
Well, but how do you know if it's an ounce or not? You got to have a perfect ounce, right? At some point, there's a standard. The National Institute of Standards in Washington, D.C. has, in very specially controlled rooms, in very specially controlled containers, at certain temperatures and pressures and humidity and everything else, finely machined blocks of metal. That, and not just any metal, it's usually something like platinum that doesn't react with anything, so it's not going to rust, it's not going to oxidize, and it is the official standard for the United States of how much something weighs. Now, granted, first thing they do is they put that on a scale, and then they put a bunch of other stuff on the scale, and they say, okay, it weighs much, good. Now, this is a good copy of the pound, right? So I'll go use this, and then I'll make a scale that always measures a pound correctly when you step on it, you know? But it starts out as a reference measurement. So the reference measurement, you ever heard the saying, you're worth your weight in gold? That was a talent. The weight of a person was a talent, roughly. Now, granted, people all weigh different things. A talent for the Romans was 100 pounds. A talent for the Greeks was about between 30 and 40 kilograms, which would be roughly about 75 pounds. So in the range of 75 to 100 pounds. Now it's lead. It's not gold or silver. Now that tells you something too.
It's heavy.
In the value, it is heavy. But it would be heavy if it was gold or silver too. But why is it lead and not gold? What's the, you know, on the scale of value, where does lead sit relative to gold? If gold is over here, where's lead?
Nothing.
On the other end, right? It's the cheapest of the metals. And it's used for the most ignominious purposes, right? Before we came up with iron pipes and things in Britain, and you know this because of what happened in London, they used lead pipes to carry their water. They still use lead for gutters and roofing in older buildings. The reason they stopped doing that was the people, by and large, were getting lead poisoning en masse in London. You can read about it back in the 1800s, 1700s. And they originally—that's how they figured out that they shouldn't use lead inside the pipes, because so many people were getting sick. But you have lead. You have a lead lid on a basket. That thing weighs, let's just say, 100 pounds. Now, and I know you guys have probably done it at some point in your life. You ever lifted weights? Some of the women have done it too, or if you know gone to the exercise place, you've lifted weights. So. You ever seen the big barbells? You know, barbells usually come and, you know, they have different size things. 25-pound weight's about that big. 50-pound weight's about that big. You ever tried carrying one? Now, you know what happens? And you know, y'all know I've been dieting. I've lost about 45 pounds, so I know what it feels like to not have carrying around that. I feel like I'm about to float off the stage sometimes. I really do. This is a heavy weight. So it's there to keep someone in, right? It's not just a decorative little, we're just going to close it up so you don't get to see it. It's about containing them like a prison.
One of my schoolmates said, which is heavier, a pound of lead or a pound of cotton? I said, they're the same. He said, which one would you rather fall on your head?
actually, a ton of cotton in a bale will crush you just as bad as a ton of lead would.
I would think that depending on how stiff it is, the cotton might form to you and might just smother you.
That's true too, it could. Okay, let's talk about the other interesting part of this. So first of all, he says this is wickedness. Now, some commentators will say, oh, this must have been an idol in the basket. Because an awful lot of the idols were women, and an awful lot of the idols were... let's say suggestively dressed women, okay? And so if they said, you know, this is wickedness, this is idolatry. You know, I'm taking idolatry. Notice, also keep it in the context of what happens. Here's a basket, and then these beings show up with wings, and they fly it off to Shinar. Shinar is a plain in Babylon. So this, take it away from Jerusalem, take it over to Babylon. And so some people will say, well, you know, this is probably just an idol. You know, it's not alive, it's not moving, it's not a real woman, it's just a feminine figurine. And it's being taken away, the idolatry is being taken away from Israel. Now, there's one thing we know about what happened when they came back from Babylon. They never got into idolatry again. That's an interesting point. And so they'll make that argument. But the problem, there's a couple of problems with that. First of all, he pulls this lid off. That woman tries to get out. This isn't an idol. Because idols are never, ever, ever in the scripture given any kind of credence of being alive or being able to move or anything. They are just sticks or stones, right? That are carved or gold pieces. So this is a woman. Now, it represents wickedness. He says, this is wickedness. He forces it back in the basket and he takes it a long way away. He takes it off to Babylon. Where did these people just come from 20 years ago? Babylon. So here he says, I'm going to expel the thief and I'm going to expel the liar and anyone else by implication. And I'm going to take wickedness far away. Now remember earlier in Zechariah, one of the things we said was, you know, when the horses went out and looked around and said everything was peaceful, and God says, I'm going to come back to Jerusalem, I'm going to bless them. And then he says, you people come, my people come out of Babylon and come here. Come back to the land. Because I'm going to judge Babylon. Where is he sending wickedness?
Babylon.
To Babylon. What do you think that's going to do to Babylon? Think it's going to be a nice place to be? No. You see, so all this is about separating. It's like, separate yourself. I'm going to put out the wicked people. I'm going to send wickedness far away. And I'm going to send it up where everybody else is. You know, there's a lot of Jews up there that sat there for 70 years and bought and sold and married and made businesses for themselves, and they didn't want to come back. And God says, that's going to be a place of judgment and of punishment and of wickedness, and you come here where it's going to be righteous, where my spirit dwells. This is going to be my place for my people again. Now, so, then we get to the only place in the Bible, the only place, where any kind of spiritual or heavenly beings have wings, that are, except for cherubim, right? We know cherubim, right? The ones with the four wings or six wings with all the faces. This is the place where everybody gets their idea of what an angel looks like. Right? Standard angel. Standard angel, male or female? Generally female. Right? I mean, you see pictures, you see images of angels, people draw angels, they typically draw them a female. Not always, but mostly.
Halo.
Yeah, yeah. And wings. Not just any old kind of wing. Not the wings of a turkey. It says the wings of a stork. And in fact, if you've ever seen a stork's wings, they have those kinds of points, right? They're pointed and long. So here you have these beings. Now, an interesting point about this, they're never called angels. I had to listen to this several times this morning coming over because I said, there's something else here I'm missing. Then I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming with the wind in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the basket between earth and heaven. So I said to the angel who talked with me, where are they carrying the basket? And he said, to build a house for it in the land of Shinar. When it is ready, the basket will be set there on its base. So, now, there are places where we have visions. You know, Daniel had visions like this, Ezekiel had visions, Zechariah had visions, where it says, and I saw someone who looks like a man, or I saw a young man over here, and he was running to he was coming to measure the city, or something like that. We're never told explicitly that all these people are angels, that all these beings, right? They probably are. So, it's not fair to say, just because it doesn't say these are angels, they're not angels, because you don't know that. But this is the only place where humanoid, right, spiritual beings have wings. All the other times we say these are angels, there's no wings mentioned. So it's just an interesting point.
And they're women.
Yeah, they're women, which is also rare. There's only, let me see. This is the only place, if I'm not mistaken, where let's just say they're angels for a moment, where you ever hear of female angels. All the ones you ever hear about are men. So, you know, just interesting little tidbit, but because people are so fascinated with angels and all this, you know, mythology around angels, that's the only place it is.
The reason we buy them like that is because they're really pretty.
Didn't say they were pretty, by the way. Oh, yeah, well, we do all the little, and the little cherubs and, you know, all the little, you know, people with wings. Doesn't say they're pretty either, by the way. In fact, most of the time when angels are talked about, they're never talked about as being handsome or pretty. They're talked about being awesome, as in frightening.
Most of the time when a person in the Old Testament, when a person realized that he had seen an angel, they said, I'm going to die.
Yeah, he was overwhelmed. So then he says, the angel said, talked with me, said, where, he said, I asked the angel, where are they carrying the basket? So they lift up this basket with wickedness in it. In her little temporary prison, right? And they said they're going to fly her off to Shinar, which is a plain in Babylon. And they're going to set it, and so they're going to build a place for it, and they're going to set it in its spot. That's what it says, set it in its place, or set it on its base. That word there in Hebrew is its spot, its location that was made for it. So there's a spot that's being prepared for this basket of wickedness in Babylon, and they're going to take it there and build a house for it. Now, if you build a house for something, what are you doing? I mean, if you went out, you know, you bought you some land and you went out and built a house, what would people assume?
You're expecting to hang around.
Yeah, you're going to hang around. You're building it as a place to live, or could be as a place to worship it, but it could be like a temple. I mean, it could be either way. That's what people say. You say that this is, you know, this is an idol. They say, oh, it's talking about you're going to go down here and you're going to construct a temple. It doesn't say that. It says a house. But it's going to its place, and God is setting it there, sending it there to stay there. It's got a house. So in both of these cases, I'm going to expel the violators of my commandments. I'm going to send wickedness far away, and it's going to stay there. So that's kind of the high level view. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to chapter 6.
In both of these, it just shows that wickedness is all through the land.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of cleansing that God has to do. And it's never completed. Because you know this, because the people, I mean, they got back from, you'd think when they all got back from captivity, they all would have said, oh boy, you know, we're going to do what God wants, right? 20 years, they still haven't built the temple. So, you know, this is the case. But, you know, like Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. One of the most amazing bits that along those lines that I've read in the Bible is when Joshua is about ready to take the people across the River Jordan into the promised land. You know what he tells them? Now get rid of the goat idols you've been carrying with you since we left Egypt 40 years ago. You've been eating manna. You've been eating quail from God. You've seen the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud. You watched your whole parents and grandparents, the entire generations older than all of you, die in the wilderness. But you were protected. Your clothes never wore out. Your shoes never wore out. You never got sick. You never got swollen. You were incredibly blessed. Now get rid of the goat idols. Doesn't that just blow your mind?
You know, at the same time, he said, are you going to obey God's commandments? And they said, we will obey God's commandments. He said, no, you won't.
Yeah. That's what he said. You're not going to do it. Now, it's important to note, the purpose of the nation of Israel, when it was a nation, it had really one purpose. What was Abraham's promise? What did God promise Abraham? All nations shall be blessed by your seed. And Paul tells us he's not talking about seeds, a basket full of seeds. He's talking about one seed, Christ. The purpose of the nation of Israel was to bring forward the Messiah into the world. Now, along with that, of course, they brought the law of God. They had all the experience of the prophets. They had all the things we have, the Word of God to teach us, but they brought forth the Christ. So just like there was always a faithful remnant, you know, we had that all through the book of Isaiah and other places, that there was going to be a remnant, no matter all the wickedness that was going on in the land, there was going to be a faithful remnant. God had that remnant working through all of this. And in fact, in the next chapter, in chapter 6 at the end, we're going to hear about that remnant, part of that remnant, because he talks about it. But let's go ahead and move on in chapter 6 a little bit, see how far we can get today. So So here he is. Here comes another vision. Then I turned and raised my eyes and looked, and behold, four chariots were coming from between two mountains, and the mountains were mountains of bronze. And the first chariot with the first chariot were red horses, with the second chariot black horses, with the third chariot white horses, and with the fourth chariot dappled horses, strong steeds. Then I answered and said to the angel who talked with me, "What are these, my lord?" And the angel answered and said to me, "These are four spirits of heaven who go out from their station before the Lord of all the earth. The one with the black horses is going to the north country, and the white are going after them. The dappled are going toward the south country." And the dappled are going toward the south country. Then the strong steeds went out, eager to go, that they might run to and fro throughout the earth. And he said, "Well, go, walk to and fro throughout the earth." So they walked to and fro throughout the earth. And he called to me, saying, and spoke to me, saying, "See, those who go toward the north country have given rest to my spirit in the north country." And that's the end of it. That's the end of that vision. Okay.
What's a devil horse?
There's no devil horse here. There's a
dabble.
Horse. Huh?
Dabble.
Dappled. Oh, I'm sorry. Dappled means spotted. So, you know, like you think about, here in the U.S., we talk about an Appaloosa. It's a spotted horse. But it also, you also hear grizzled and bay is what the King James uses. It basically means spotted with red color in it, is what it means in Hebrew. So, what do we have here? We've got four. First of all, there are these mountains. Two mountains. Not just any old mountains. Mountains of bronze. Okay? Bronze is a shiny metal. Goldish, reddish, goldish kind of metal. So, this is obviously a figurative vision. He's not saying, "I looked out over there and there's the Mountain of Olives and there's Mount Zion and here comes the chariots coming." This is a big, you know, vision. And between the mountains, four chariots are coming. And the first chariot has red horses, the second has black, the third has white, and the fourth has speckled ones. And they're all strong horses. So four chariots, each chariot has different colored horses. Then I answered and said to the angel, "What are these?" You know, good old Zechariah, he's not afraid to say he doesn't know. That most commentators are not so good. And the angel answered and said to me, "These are four spirits of heaven." So he told him very plainly, okay, how many horses do you have? The answer is, we don't know. How many chariots do you have? Four. And it says there were horses on the chariots, right? And there were horses, so at least more than one, of the same color on each of the four chariots. That's all we know. And he says, these are four spirits of heaven. So hold it. So the horses aren't the spirits. The chariot, the group, and it says nothing about the drivers of the chariots too. You notice that. So that, you know, this is a vision. He's trying to get a point across, and he says, you got all these, and the horses were strong and eager to go out. Have you ever seen a horse race? You see the horses in the gate before the race? They're ready to go, aren't they? In fact, sometimes they're bashing and slamming around and raising up and they're just about to burst. They can't stand it. They're ready to go. That's the same kind of thing here. It's saying, we're ready to go. We're ready to go do our work. And they want, it says, they're eager to go that they might walk to and fro throughout the earth. And he said to them, go, walk to and fro throughout the earth. So they walk to and fro throughout the earth. Now, why in the world did he say that three times in a row? The answer is we don't know. But this is something that's indicative of Hebrew a lot of times too. Is you'll get repetition like that. In English we try to avoid such repetition. Right? If you're a good storyteller, you may talk about the same scene, but every time you describe it during the middle of a story, you'll give it a little different twist. Or like in English, you know, we have 1,000 words for every meaning, right? So you choose different words. You don't want to be redundant. And so when we look at this language, we go, man, that's redundant. Why didn't you just say, look, yeah, they wanted to do that. You know, they said they wanted to go, and it says, fine, go do your work. So they did. That's how we'd say it in English, right? We wouldn't repeat it three times. But Hebrew's more likely to repeat it for emphasis. But Here's their job. They go walk to and fro throughout the earth. And he says that's their job. These are the four spirits of heaven who go out from their station before the Lord of all the earth. These are spiritual beings. And God, and they've been standing before God. And God says, okay, go check out the earth. Now hold it. Didn't we hear this before in chapter 1? The very first vision, what do we have? We had all those horses down in the bottom, right around the myrtle trees. You remember that?
They got little spies.
Well, and he said, go out, look around the earth, wander around the earth and see how things are going. And here he's doing the same thing, but now with these chariots and these really strong horses. Now, people want to try to make all kinds of stuff about the colors of the horses. I said this when we talked about chapter 1. Oh, this color has to, this chariot has to be, this color has to be this. Or they're going to the North Country, so they're going to look at Russia. Or, we don't know, folks. What we do know is they go everywhere and they go throughout the whole earth, to and fro throughout the earth. And when they come back, and in particular, he's talking about the North Country. Look what he says in verse 8. And he called to me and spoke to me, saying, see, those who go toward the North Country have given rest to my spirit in the North Country. Now, in chapter 1, remember, all is the same vision the same night. So Zechariah is going like, yeah, I remember that. That was just an hour ago when we were talking about that, or however long it was. He said they went up and they looked around, and what did they say? The whole earth is quiet. Now, the argument the angel made there was, he said, Lord, the whole earth is quiet. All the pagan nations are quiet and at rest and at peace. Why are your children still in strife? Will you not bless them now? And of course, it was time to bless them. That's what he said. It's time to bless them. But here he's saying, they've quieted my spirit in the North Country. The North Country to the people in Jerusalem was Assyria, Babylon, and beyond. Right? But that's all we know. So, the horses, when we see these horses, and not every time you see horses is it going to mean this, because when we get to Revelation, we're going to see horses and it doesn't have anything to do with this. In Zechariah, the horses are God's watchmen. They go out and look around and see what's going on. And it says, those who have gone toward the North Country have given rest to my spirit. He says, they've gone and told me, okay, things are happening like I want it to happen, my spirit's at rest. My interpretation. Okay. That's where we're going to stop, because next time we're getting back to Joshua. Because all of a sudden Joshua the high priest shows up, and some guys show up from Babylon with silver and gold. And God says, make him a crown. Which is what Jim was teaching the other night. Any other questions or comments?
And he's saying,
yeah.
What to stop her from going back to her home when they release her?
They didn't say they were going to release her. They said they were going to set the basket in its place. It doesn't say that she's ever released. But you're right. What would keep her from doing it? But you know what? God knows how to take care of those things. We do have an example, by the way, in Daniel. Remember Daniel and when Gabriel was talking to him, he said, Daniel started praying and Gabriel was sent to him. He said, it took me 3 weeks to get to you because the prince of Persia was fighting against me. And then Michael, the chief prince, came and helped me. So there's opposition in the spiritual realm. And so there's probably somebody keeping watch on that basket. All right, we'll stop there.